street.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy. La-da-da-da-da-da-da, feeling groovy. Hello, lamppost, what you knowing? I come to watch your flowers growing. You got no rhymes for me. Do it and do-do, feeling groovy.
Hey, it's John Amundson, and I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series of podcasts presented to you by the Psychologists Association of Alberta. The purpose of the podcast is to present information that's timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership. I led in with that song because our topic today comes from an article, a popular article I found on the net, on dopamine. And the title of the article is Three Activities to Beneficially Release Dopamine. In just a minute, let's go ahead with that. Okay, that's going to go da-da-da forever, I think. The issue with dopamine has been touched upon in other podcasts and certainly been touched upon in our popular literature. For the most part, though, it's been spoken of relative to dopamine fasting. So let's talk a little bit about what we know about this system and why often dopamine fasting is recommended. We know that this pathway in the brain has to do with strive, drive, and reward. So that when we are pursuing something, we're curious, we're excited, that is a product of the dopamine system. And we know that with, you know, high levels of stimulation, it can lead to overconsumption. Let me explain that a little bit. When this drive-drive-reward system is co-opted by, you know, profoundly significant stimulus in our lives, profoundly significant meaning something that calls our attention and invites us to participate, it can lead to overeating. Sexuality, excessive expressions of sexuality, say pornography. It can lead to gambling, and it is also associated with addictions, drug addiction. So the dopamine system has had a lot of bad press relative to the hyper-stimulating society that we live in, and especially that we are encouraged to activate this system. Media, for example. My phone is sitting next to me right here, and this morning I've had a bunch of texts and a couple of phone calls, and I'm looking at it all the time because that's a very, very powerful strive, drive, reward system. I'm waiting to hear back from this person. I wonder what this other person is doing, and on and on and on. So the hyperstimulation around us all the time, again, I just use media, but advertisement, all the should, must, ought, gottas that provide purported opportunities for us to have a better car, to look better, to be able to eat whatever we want, and on and on. Have you ever sat down and turned on your TV and you have 170 stations and all of a sudden you're going through, and nothing looks good because you're more into a strive, drive, reward than the actual pursuit of something that would be satisfying or satiate your needs. All right, so the dopamine system again has had this negative press. However, in this article they talk about three ways we can co-opt and use the dopamine system to our benefit. All right, so let's go into those. All right, now one footnote: this system is probably a product of very successful evolution, because when we are alert and looking for things in our environment all the time, and hunting and gathering and paying attention, we're more likely to discover opportunities to our benefit than if that system is not operating. So there's a sort of evolutionary basis for it. All right, so we'll go into the three things that this article recommends for co-opting and using the dopamine system to our benefit. All right, the first one obviously is one of my greatest hits, and that's exercise. It's the most universally applicable example. Exercise increases release throughout the reward system, and it can lead to enduring benefits, even with biologically based disorders like Parkinson's. So exercise is huge in getting that system working. It's even believed that the use of exercise does show increased levels of dopamine in the blood stream, but even the creation of dopamine receptors, so you get more receptors in your brain. So the more you're exercising, and we're going to get to the other couple of things too, the more curious you are, the more those receptors increase. They create a curious drive reward sort of brain, which I believe all of us would prefer to have, especially as we age. That is, to continue to look for novel circumstances and activities that will increase that sense of I'm excited about doing something. Because that is the second, they call it a hack, for this reward system, this drive reward system. The second hack to it is novelty. And that, again, evolutionarily, looking for novelty allows us to adapt to changes in our environment more readily and more successfully. So they talk about co-opting this system, the dopamine system, by things like going to unfamiliar places, trying different kinds of foods, interacting with different groups of people, engaging in routines but doing them in a different way, so that all of a sudden, if you have walked east, south, and east again, walk south and double east. In other words, try things, you're doing them in different ways, right? So that you're building a anticipatory sense of one's life each day, which is related to the dopamine system. Again, we've already talked about these in other podcasts, and then they've been talked about greatly relative to cognitive function. When they speak of successful adaptation in stages of life, they will often say, learn to play a musical instrument, learn a foreign language, try interacting with people socially in an increased manner, like find more social groups and more people to interact with. So that's the second dopamine co-option and hacking. The third one is really cool, and I'll be anecdotal about this. Sorry, I had to pause. I started to cough. You know me, every now and then off I go. Getting back to it, I'm going to be anecdotal about this, because the third dopamine co-opting system is music. In other words, when we're listening to music and it is affecting our mood, it is something we're enjoying, we're also doing this, this reward system is activated. And the anecdote I want to share is that for years and years, 25, 30 years more, whenever I have to do a task that is either routine or monotonous, I listen to music. So shoveling snow, walking my dog, training when I'm out training in a boat, or even racing, if it's a distance race, the sprints, you don't want anything to interfere. But nonetheless, I do listen to the music on the way up to the line because it activates this drive, drive, reward. It becomes an excitatory feature. In other words, it raises my heart rate, it raises my alertness, and prepares me for what I'm doing. So what they talk about music is that it actually can touch into the very same survival-based rewards that, like, food, water, and reproduction, sexuality, gets a hold of. It can touch that. It can touch the dopamine system in a very, very similar ways. In very, very similar ways. There's a sentence I'll read from this. It says, one of the theories linking music to dopaminergic activation is what they call reward prediction error. Reward prediction error represents the difference between an expected and an actual reward. And this is whether the reward value exceeds the predicted value, see? So when the reward exceeds expectations, positive, then the system is firing more. So when you're listening to music, and especially a new piece of music, your brain is constantly anticipating what the next song might be. When your mind predicts that pattern, you move in that direction of what they call reward prediction, a positive reward prediction. See? So if you expect a song to be a certain way, like when Bob Dylan kind of made his shift from acoustic to electric and the fans sort of walked away, it can drop. In other words, if you say, "Oh, I'm listening to the Bob Dylan song," and it's electric guitar music, it's electric backup, whatever, all of a sudden there's a disappointment. So I think that's really cool, right? And again, the appealing part of music is the more we listen to it, the more those structures are there, so that even when we're listening to a song we might have heard 100 times, as we're moving forward with it, all of a sudden you can suddenly find the word that you know that's coming in the song, and suddenly mouth it, and so there's that sense of anticipatory positive reward. Adding to this, and again this is anecdotal, it isn't part of this article, would be body movement associated with music. So that when one is listening to a song and begins to move relative to that song, and especially not in a particularly repetitive movement, that is exploring different sorts of movements with it, hands high, hands low, legs forward, legs to the side, whatever it is, this would also activate this reward system. Anyway, so there it is. So we've got dopamine fasting when people are freaking out, when the system is co-opted by, other objects of strive, drive, reward. And then this is the way to co-opt it and bring it back in within our domain so that we can find the pleasure of that particular reward system.
This is that ice cold Michelle fight for that white gold. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpieces. Stylin', wildin', living it up in the city. Got Chucks on with Saint Laurent, gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. I'm too